Ching, ching, bling, bling. Let's cut the chatter. In today's episode, we have our home cooking hero to six-pack chef and beyond. Welcome to the Tucci Talks Wealth, Health, and Everything Else podcast. I'm your host, David Tucci, an educator, a father of three. Join me as I take you on a funky journey through life, from a reckless young man to a humbled older man. Each week, I will offer different insights on my life experiences and the experiences of others and how that has shaped our present day realities. So let's begin our funky journey into improving our health, wealth, and you guessed it, everything else. Monday, Monday, Tucci's back again. Monday, Monday, he's back with all of his beautiful friends. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome to Tucci Talks Wealth, Health, and Everything Else. I'm your host, David Tucci, and even if you cannot sing, it will make your day if you sing along to your favorite song. Sing it in the shower, because that's where you become the best singer to ever exist. I'm glad I can share this Monday with you. I have to give a big shout out to Anthony Carlucci from Mississauga, who contacted me on Snapchat and typed, quote, "the Bengals!" exclamation mark. That was for last week's tune. So let's do that same thing again this week. First person to contact me gets a shout out on next week's episode. Who sings that song I was singing along with at the start? Email me, david@tuccitalk75.com, or contact me on social media, Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, @tuccitalk75. I'm excited for today's guest, because of his positive energy and his vibrant nature. As always, I love being around people with positive vibes. If you are looking for weekly positive vibes, make sure to subscribe to the podcast, like it, leave a review on Apple Podcasts. You know how it works. With more support, the algorithms start to do their thing. Before we can get started with today's guest, I have to relive last week's episode, and I give my 2 cents on what I learned. Please don't go anywhere. Just give me 30 seconds and
I'll be back. I'm back.
What did I learn from having Sean Dursey on the podcast last week? People just see the end product, the success. They do not see the sacrifice that was made to get there, the hard work put in when nobody is looking. Here's a quote from Hall of Famer Jerry Rice that epitomizes this concept. Quote, "Today, I will do what others won't, so tomorrow, I can accomplish what others can't." End quote. If that means you have to wake up at 4:30 a.m. to get your weight training in or your yoga in, well, that's what you do. If you can only get your kickboxing workout in at 2 a.m., then that's what you do. If 5 a.m. is the only time you can peacefully check your emails and respond to emails, that's what you do. That's what Dursey did. He had a rough swim in the ocean of discomfort, and now he is a skip away from cracking an NHL lineup. That's what it takes, and I'm happy for Dursey, and I wish him the greatest success. Let's move on to today. My next guest grew up in an Asian household in Mississauga. Having been influenced by cooking at a very young age, his path was laid out. He has worked in high-profile kitchens like Langdon Hall and Momofuku Shoto before focusing on his own culinary consulting and catering brand, Six Pack Chef. As the name of his business suggests, He is a health and fitness junkie. Struggling with his weight in his youth led to his devotion to healthy and delicious cooking. He has found success in several cooking competition shows like Top Chef Canada, Chopped Canada, and Fridge Wars by bringing his creative freestyle cooking to the forefront. He is a cancer survivor, he is an inspiration, but above all else, he is a kind human being. It is with great pleasure that Tucci Talks welcomes the six-pack chef himself, Mr. Wallace Wong. Welcome to Tucci Talks, and you're a busy dude. You're absolutely killing it in the culinary world. So I want to ask you, what's the most important ingredient for you to maintain a sense of calm and not get too overwhelmed in your life? You notice how I used ingredient?
I did. So honestly, I'm going to give you two. First one is self-awareness. And then the second one is support system.
That's excellent.
So I guess I'll get more into it, where self-awareness is, with all the things going on and everything like that, you can easily get caught up of comparisons, or how much, what my video is, or what's this person's cooking, or what kind of cuisine is this person doing, or this and that, and this person's sponsored by this, or you've got this brand deal, or this and that. And then you start not thinking about what you end up wanting to do, what you love to do, what do you want to tell people, what do you want to bring to your viewers or your supporters, whoever follows you for whatever it is. So self-awareness is a big factor, because then once you are like, you know what, this person's doing that, I'm doing this because the people who follow me like this kind of stuff. It's okay if nobody else likes it.
Right.
And then support system is big, because you, at the end of the day, you can't do everything by yourself. You don't live life as a single person. So when you have good times, when you have bad times and all that, being able to talk to your support system, of whether it's just telling them, hey, look, today I made this recipe and this person told me, it reminded them of their grandmother that, you know, passed away a couple of years ago or whatever. That's something that makes you feel good, and that then you keep on doing it. Or if it's something bad, you're able to tell someone and be like, hey, I made this video and like nobody liked it. Like no one liked my food, or no one liked my recipe. There wasn't a lot of shares or comments or stuff. And then you have that support system to be like, hey, they can, knowing who you are, they'll be like, either, yeah, well, your recipe sucked, like it was pretty basic. Or it was like, oh, you know, not everybody likes everything, but you have other great recipes and just keep on going. So it all depends. I think those two are very important.
That keeps you anchored.
Yeah.
That essentially keeps you anchored.
It keeps you secured enough.
Do me a favor. So can you, like, I'm getting reverb on your audio.
I can put on a mic. Like, no, earphones.
Do you want to try putting headphones on?
I'm doing that right now. Hello?
Yeah.
How's that?
Oh, that's so much clearer.
Okay, cool.
That's amazing. All right. So the title of this episode is Home Cooking Hero to Six Pack Chef and Beyond. And I want to unpack this title to start. So Six Pack Chef is your brand. Can you tell the listeners a little about how that came to be and the inspiration behind that?
Yeah, so you probably knew me a little bit before I got fat, but I was a fat kid growing up. Very, very. I was clinically obese. Sort of had like this whole fitness journey kind of thing. It all started when about grade six, I wanted to start losing weight because I went to a new school. I went to St. Gertrude, and I wanted to make the basketball team. I wanted girls to start liking me, because that was like that was the time frame. What ended up happening was, over the years of grade six to eight, from high school to university, it was this constant thing of trying to lose weight and trying to get fit and everything a teen wants. And then that's obviously how we met through high school. You're my coach. And then I started losing weight, all that kind of stuff, but I was never like optimal in regards to my physique. I was what most people would be calling, I guess, skinny fat.
you know, you look pretty skinny with clothes on and stuff. You take off your shirt, you're still flabby and you've got that like middle section and all that kind of stuff. And I didn't know anything about diet, nutrition. I just knew how to work hard. So then I would do like P90X, Insanity. I just do curls and just abs. That was all of it. And what happened was then after university, I didn't have a gym anymore. I didn't have the university gym. So I had to go find a gym and I went to a local, local gym, Good Life. And I just started working out. And, one of the personal trainers who's a friend of mine now, he was like, "Hey, like you're here more than most people. You're here and you train harder than most people. You ever think of competing?" And I was like, "No, not really." I was like, "What are you talking about?" You know, and especially like at that time, competing was like, you know, for someone who doesn't look at bodybuilding or not into fitness industry, it looks really, really kind of lame and kind of stupid, kind of like weird, right? Muscular guys in like posing trunks or Speedos, or like these guys in board shorts or bikini girls. But I ended up going, yeah, because I was like, I want to reach a certain level of a physique and I've never done it. And for me, I've realized that I'm someone that needs to be accountable for things. So I was like, you know what? I'm competitive. So I'll do this competition. I'll do a competition. And I did my first one, got into like the best shape that I've ever gotten in my life. I was hooked. And then, but because I didn't win and I knew that there's so many things I needed to improve on, I just kept on competing. So that's like the fitness side of it. Now the cooking side of it was, I grew up as a Chinese background. So I've always cooked. Family and food has always been two really big pillars. And a lot of my most happiest memories were from there. And through when we got to high school, I took the culinary class, as an elective, because that's something I just like to do. And I was better than most just because I'm just so used to cooking from at home, not restaurants or anything like that.
You mean better than most of the kids in the class?
Yeah. And then I ended up doing Skills Ontario, Skills Canada, and that was like doing it for the high school level and represented Ontario. And I lost again, but I lost first place and I came third in Canada by like 2 points. And I know, wow. And it was like 2 points or something like that. And I remember I was like, if I ever get to do this again, I'm gonna do it again, because they had a college level. And then not long behold, I went to university for business, because I didn't know what I would. I never wanted to be a chef. I never wanted to be a chef. And I went to business school because I wanted to own something. I didn't know what it was. I knew that I wanted to be my own boss one day, hopefully be able to, because it's just because how I thought of things. And I was like, if I go to business school, at least it'll satisfy my parents in a way that I'm going to business school. Or go to university, but B, right. It's like, at least it's broad enough that I can go into any kind of industry if I really wanted to. So I went to business school, did my first year at Laurier. And then after my first year, I realized I was missing cooking, you know, I was missing cooking and I was like watching Food Network and like looking up cooking books and stuff more than like my business books and things. So what I ended up doing was I searched, culinary schools, and then down the road from Laurier was Conestoga College. And then I was like, oh, they've got a cooking program. So I literally went on one of my days off or after class or something like that. I still have my backpack on and I was going through the hallways just looking into classes. And then the teacher comes out and she's like, "Hey, get back to class." I was like, "Sorry, I'm not a student here." And then she's like, "Oh," she's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm just sort of looking." And then she's like, "Well, I've got like 5-10 minutes. Would you like me to give you like a tour?" I was like, "Oh, okay, cool." So we did a little tour. She gave me some pamphlets. And then I went home and next thing you know, I applied. And then the next September, I started my second year of business school and I started my first year of culinary school.
So you're doing both at the same time?
Yeah. So I did university and college at the same time at two different programs. And it was hard. It was hard because of not of going to class, but just balancing everything.
Right.
Especially because it's two different programs that have nothing to do with each other.
Right.
So like I had to like really learn network with the coordinators and program and the classes and the teachers and people and just be like, "Hey, like I've got class at this time or whatever. I might be 10 minutes late. I'm so sorry." Or like going to a professor and be like, I can't make this because I really have an exam. Is there any way that I can like put this ahead of time? Or like, can I get the notes ahead or behind or whatever?"
Were they accommodating?
They were very accommodating because I never brought it up as of like, this is all about me. It's like, right. It's like, what can we do together? Like, I try to make it as much as we can work together on it. And long story short, graduated with both and did that. And then when I graduated from university, I thought I wanted to be like the best chef in the world. Like, I wanted to be the best chef in the world. I've cooked in some of the best restaurants in the world at that time already. I had a job lined up to open up a great restaurant when it all said and done. And at the end of the day, I left that industry. I left the industry just because it's hard. It's a hard industry to do.
Chef, right? The cooking?
Being a chef. It's super hard. There's no social, talk about social life. There isn't none. Talk about family life. Very nothing. Wage is very low. It's one of those. But before any of this, long story short was I left the industry and then I decided to, but while I was still cooking and like whether I was like teaching, so I taught cooking school. I did a little side gigs here and there. I was still working out and I started my competing. So I did competing and I was still working in the restaurants. And then in my fitness and because of fitness and all that stuff, that's actually gone on to like social.
Did that help with stress though, with the chef world working out? Cause you said it's tons of hours.
It sometimes added to my stress, but I needed it.
Right,
it kept
right.
me alive. It kept me alive. Like staying gotcha. Fit was like my coffee in the morning. It was right. like my caffeine, that endorphins.
And yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It just made good. It better. And I also, it was a little ego thing a little bit sometimes where like, at least when I'm in the kitchen, the chefs would be like, oh, yo, it's Wallace. What are you doing with your protein shakes? Or like, or like you woke up to go to the gym. For me, it was like this like thing on my shoulder. I was like, yeah, I woke up. I cooked just as much as you guys. And I woke up and I busted my ass and I went to the gym. But anyways, and then I got onto social. I got onto Instagram because of Juan. Do you remember Juan Cortez? My boy Juan?
No, sounds familiar, but if I saw a picture, I would remember.
Yeah. So me and him ended up going to the gym all the time. Like he was my training partner when I first started. And he got me onto Instagram. And then the fitness community on Instagram, when I started competing, that's how I started meeting a lot of people. So I got on Instagram and it became a lot of like fitness stuff. A lot of fitness things, started posting fitness stuff. And then, but I also started posting some of my food stuff. And a lot of the fitness industry, they didn't know me at that time. And like, I wasn't anybody really per se, you know, but sure, I was on Chopped. But besides that, they didn't really know much. And when they saw me like post things about me working in the kitchen and sometimes some of my dishes and stuff, whether it was fitness industry people or whether it was cooks, they'd be like, oh, muscle chef, flex chef. Or like, you know, the bicep chef or whatever you want to call it. And then what ended up happening was at that same time, my uncle and his coworkers, so they're in the film industry. They're in the film industry. Like they worked for like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon and like National Geographic and all these things. They wanted to get into the blogging and app life. And then so they approached me as the medium, you know, as the topic.
Yeah.
A topic. And we talked about it. We're like, yeah, cool. That would work. You know, the whole like sort of my health journey of fitness, of cancer, but also of cooking and all this kind of stuff. And then they're like, okay, we need a name. We're like, what do we call you? And then they're like flexing chef muscle. I'm like, no. It's too like in your face. It's too rough. I don't want to be that bro kind of vibe. So then we ended up doing six pack. Ended up doing six pack chef because A, six pack, everybody just understands that in a certain way. But B, it's very easy to be six pack of, you know, six pack of bread or six pack of some sort of food or something like that. And that's how it started. But what then happened was we did one series, like maybe four videos or something like that. The only problem was that those guys are so good. Like they're so pro. That one video took like 3 days, like five people. So,
wow.
And like no one was making money, right? So for them, they at the end of the day, it wasn't feasible. It wasn't something that was a long-term feasible thing. But we already like had, you know, the website and we created a logo and stuff. So then at the end of the day, I just took it. So I took it and like I owned it and I just took it. And whatever I did, I tried things. So for the last 10 years, I've taken Six Pack Chef and I've just tried things with it. What I mean by that is I've done like, you know, personal training. I've done private chefing. I've done catering. I've done consulting. I've done a meal prep service. I've done all these kind of things. And then now I've taken Six Pack Chef and I've sort of built it to this area where it's a little more clear in regards to direction. So Six Pack Chef is, like you said, it's my personal brand. It's my personal brand. It's also a brand. It's a media and media content creation company based upon three pillars of eat good, look good, and live great. So all things food, all things health and fitness, and all things lifestyle. So encompassing all that, what I do is I do product development for food industry, food products, but also health products, right? I do events and catering and gigs and all these sort of really cool collaborations and partnerships with different brands that fit those three pillars. So I've worked with cannabis companies, I've worked with barbershops, I've worked with restaurants, I've worked with supplement companies, I've worked with, you know, guest speaking places and all that stuff. And that's sort of where Six Pack Chef is, because it is a direct representation of myself. It's the three things that really embrace and embody, I guess, who I am as a person. And that's how, where it goes.
Like I said, you're absolutely killing it. The first part of the title is Home Cooking Hero. And you mentioned cancer in there.
Yeah.
And you're an inspiration to a lot of people.
Appreciate that.
Do you consider yourself a hero? Because I've known you since you were a young teenager. And you know what I remember? I remember you walking in the halls of St. Francis Xavier with a patch over your eye. And if I remember correctly, was it your right eye?
Left eye.
So it was your left eye that you would walk with. I remember that vividly, that you would be walking with a patch. Do you want to share a little bit about that experience going through that as a high school kid?
Yeah, sure. I totally forgot about the patch until you brought that up. I
see how did we totally remember different things as people. And I remember you with that patch walking the halls.
Yeah. So what happened was, it was my last year of high school, grade 12. And then it started off in about like September when I was still playing football. I was playing football and stuff. And somehow I started getting this little bump on my left eye. And then it got into like, it got kind of big enough that you noticed it, that people would notice it. And then I ended up going to the eye doctor to just check it out. And then they're like, oh, it's just a cyst. So it's just a cyst. That simple, it's very common, very simply. You can, you know, we'll schedule you to get surgery. It's just to remove it. And then it's all good. It's usually just protein that's coagulated. And that's why it was causing me to like have, my eyes were very watery because it was blocking my tear duct. I would have red eyes because it was just so watery all the time. And so that was September. Then my surgery was in December. So from September to December, I had about 3 months. And within that 3 months, it changed drastically. Like, it grew bigger.
And this is 2009?
2007.
It had to be before I went to Italy. Yeah, so 2007.
2007. So it was that. It started growing. It started going really big. My face was deformed because of how it was pushed. It actually pushed my like left eye up. And then it got big. It got really, really big. I looked really, really hideous. But I just sort of kept on playing it off. And I ended up getting an eye patch just because, you know, to get it done. And then I remember it was bad. I remember I took like a computer science class. And I remember, I can't remember the teacher's name, nor does it matter. But I remember after class, the teacher, he took me outside at the classroom. He just asked me, he was like, hey, I need to, like, Wallace, is everything okay with your eye? I need to know just for like my safety and the safety of the students. I was like, oh, no, it's just a cyst. Don't worry. I know it looks ugly. And then like, I remember that vividly because I was like, damn, I look really bad. And I was,
so you didn't have, at that time, you didn't have a patch on it?
No, not yet. Cause didn't do anything. I only started putting a patch on, I think it was either after the surgery but I don't think it was after, it might've been after the surgery that I put a patch on. But it was also because I think I started putting a patch on because it was just so like big. But I did surgery in December. It was all clear and all things. And I think that's actually where I did put the patch. And then we went on to Christmas break. And then it was, I think, January 1st or January 2nd. I definitely know it was New Year's, where I was in the kitchen with my grandparents. And then we got a phone call. I picked it up. And I was with my grandparents in the kitchen. My mom was upstairs. I picked it up. My mom picked it up. But she spoke first. So I sort of just eavesdropped in, and all I heard was, "Hey, happy new year. This is Dr. Blah, blah, blah. I'm the surgeon who did the surgery for Wallace on his cyst. And just had to call back and just wanted to say that we took a biopsy and sorry, but it turned out that it came out positive for cancer." And that's all I remember. And I remember my mom just starting to be like, what do you mean? And I sort of was like, did he say really what I thought he said? And then I remember I listened for a little bit and then I just hung up because I started hearing my mom sort of like, you know, breaking down.
And you didn't want to hear that.
I don't know. I guess I didn't want to hear it. I didn't know anything else. I just knew that I had cancer or whatever. And I knocked and I hung up. And then I remember my grandparents, they looked at me like, "Hey, who's that?" I was like, "Oh, it's my doctor." And then they're like, "Oh, is everything okay?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's amazing." And then I remember I just hugged them. And then I went upstairs. And then my mom was off the phone by that time. And then she just sort of looked at me and like bawling. And all I did was I just hugged her and I said, "It's okay." I said, "It's okay. It'll be fine." And then I live with a big family. So like I live with like at least like my aunts and my uncles and everything. So like we had 8 people. And then throughout the day, everybody would trickle in. And then like everybody would sort of play it off pretty okay. And then like it'll be like 2-3 minutes in, and then suddenly you'll see it in their eyes. Like you'll see it in their eyes and then they'll start crying or something. And then that's when, you know, same thing. There was no point that day I can look back where I was like, I was scared or I was sad. Mm-hmm. All I remember doing was just hugging everybody and telling them it's okay. And then I do remember it was when it was by myself that I sort of laid into bed. I laid in bed in the middle of the day. I remember I don't do that. I laid in bed and I was just looking. I was like, is this it? I was like,
right.
I was like, is this it? And I was like, I haven't done anything. Yeah. I really haven't done anything. At that time, I remember I sort of just
So you pretty much, there was this idea that I might die.
Oh, 100%. Because I didn't know anything, right? Right. So I remember I just like openly sort of just went like, God, I was like, is this it? Like, but I haven't done anything. Like, I swear I've got more to offer. And then I was like, this can't be it. This is not over. And then I was like, I'm going to survive this. It'll be okay. And then I don't know. All I did was just start going online. And I don't suggest it if you don't know anything.
Right.
But I just started going online. I'm like, how can you die with cancer? I was like just searching the most things, like how long do I have if I have cancer, or like this and this, and like what type of cancer and all that kind of stuff.
You're saying you're not suggesting that because people could kind of rack their brain doing that.
Yeah, 100%. But what ended up happening was just that. And then we went right into a big 6-month blast of radiation and chemotherapy. And I still went to school. I still went to school and did everything. I still took the basketball class. That was another one. And then I just kept staying active. Staying active and like, yeah, and that was it. And that was sort of.
Well, I got to say, you're definitely a hero to a lot of people, even including me. And I was excited when you were coming on. But every hero needs a villain in their story. So who was your villain? It doesn't have to be a person.
Myself.
Why do you say that?
I am very self-driven. I realized I was very self-driven because I realized at that, because I think I, okay, so I grew up with, I was bullied. I was a bullied child, bullied kid. I remember I got literally Spartan kicked one time at this like tutoring place. I got Spartan kicked because I got up and I wanted a cookie and he's like, "No, you're so fat." And then I was like, "No, I want a cookie." And I went to go grab the cookie and he Spartan kicked me across the room. Like, damn. I literally like went straight to the back. My whole body hit the back. I remember. But like a lot of things I realized, because I was also afraid to tell my parents or people like my family things. And I was like, you know what? I can't tell someone anything. So the only thing I can do is to make sure I somehow do it myself. So a lot of things that I've done has been a lot of self-motivated. And because of that, at the same time, I can also be my worst enemy. Meaning like I can put tons of pressure on myself, or because I always sort of take a lot of things onto my own shoulders, that I can put a lot of stress on myself. I can put a lot of expectations. And at the end of the day, even I said it in the beginning, where I was like, self-awareness is a very big thing. It's one of those where I can sometimes be also a hypocrite, where I'm like, I also still compare. I'll always compare to somebody, which is a big downfall of comparing, of like, hey, this person's doing this amazing thing with this brand, or this person's constantly having these many followers and his or her content is so amazing. And like, oh, why am I not getting this amount of likes? Or why do I not have as much brand sponsorships? Or why am I not landing these gigs? Or why don't I have this nice car?
That's normal. But you're saying you got to ignore the noise. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. At the end of the day, and that's where that villain comes from. The villain
comes from
me putting like my own noise into my own head.
So that message of bullying, you didn't want to tell anybody. What message would you give a child who maybe came to you and said they were bullied or they're being bullied?
Is that A, you're not alone. It's that you're not alone, meaning it's not, you're not the only person that has to deal with that. There are people that have dealt with it. Another thing is that it's not right. It's not right. And another thing is, so for me, why I didn't tell my family was because I didn't want them to worry about me, but at the same time, I didn't want also attention to be like, yo, like, you know, I don't, there's something about it that I don't like pity or being seen as like vulnerable or weak kind of thing. But that, for those listening, that might be bullying stuff, don't, it's not a weakness at all. And I say it's much, for me, looking back, it would have been much easier to simply tell somebody that you really, really trust and are open to, and have that open relationship to be able to be like, hey, this person is, it's not always going to be like that, you know, and you can always say something of like, I don't want to get this person in trouble, or I don't want to like, hey, I just want it to stop, or things like that. Cause a lot of times people sometimes are afraid of telling people about situations like this because of confrontation.
What message though, can you give parents then whose children are being bullied if they were to ask you?
For parents is, don't go right away and be like, yo, I'm going to like go get this kid in trouble, right, or make it such a big deal or whatever. It's more of like the first thing as a parent, for someone who doesn't have kids or anything, but someone who teaches and like mentors and talks to people as well. It's that I always look at things from the other person's perspective. For some way, it's like, if you were to tell your kid, like, hey, look, let's use Billy, who's been bullying you. It's not right. And I know you're going to be angry and upset, and he's done some really, really bad things, but maybe there could also be reasons why he's doing like that. Maybe he's been bullied or he's thing. So yes, you have every right to be upset at that person. You also have every right to maybe see it from his perspective, so that you don't put that grief and burden and that conscious on you of being like, this guy's such a, you know, a D-bag or a jerk. Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's a big thing that I've learned also through cancer, is taking everything from that positive other's perspective.
Right. And if there's some parents out there listening, just give your child a hug. Sit.
Yeah.
Tell them you love them. That's usually enough.
You know, it's funny. It's funny you say that, because like, coming from a strict Asian background, we don't do that.
I know.
Like we don't say I love you. We don't like, it's like, okay.
But you could change that. You could change that if you have a family.
100%.
So before we move out of your teenage and younger days, just want to ask one more question, and it kind of relates to me, and I'm curious. What do you remember about being part of the Xavier Senior Boys basketball team?
I remember is that I had to earn every single second. What I mean by this is, I am not genetically gifted. I'm not genetically gifted. I grew up loving the game of basketball, but I was never around leagues or anything like that. So when it came to like the straight skill set of like basketball and all that stuff, I had to learn all that stuff. So like when I went to grade 6 to make it to the senior basketball team for grade 8, it took me all 3 years to make it. I went from, you know, the practice squad, not getting to like going to trials for the first time, learning what freaking, you know, the defense office, that kind of stuff, making the practice squad, just doing, make, going, you know, hanging out after class to just be able to be around the people and like being the scorekeeper or like putting the balls away or any of that. That's
just to be around that environment.
Just, yeah, 100%. And to be able to like, when people are like shooting, you never know. Like,
yeah.
And so that was until grade eight and then grade and then high school. I didn't make juniors. I didn't. And then so juniors, grade nine, grade 10, grade 11, grade 12. I did not make any single first cuts until grade 12. It took me 4 years to make the basketball team. And I made it, but I wasn't even on like the main squad. I was on the practice squad.
Right.
But that for me was, I was like, at least I'm there.
Gotcha. It's
for me was, at least my foot is in the door. There could always be some sort of moment. Who knows? Whatever. And then I remember I was just really, really happy because that was one of the biggest things I wanted to do. I loved everything about being on a team. I loved the training. I loved being part of this camaraderie, practice, the, you know, being able to go wear a uniform and having stands and having people like watch and doesn't matter what it was. And like going to like other schools.
And I want people to know you were always a worker in practice and you always had that positive mindset. And yeah. I could tell that you really enjoyed playing basketball. It gave you a sense of calm and ease and like a freedom.
It showed. It was that. And it's also, like I said, I'm not genetically gifted at anything. I honestly, whether it's basketball or life, I'm not special whatsoever. The only thing I have is hard work. And that's the only thing I can change. I can't I can't change whether or not freaking Clint is going to give me the basketball on a run.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like if Asari or Brian or all these guys would like pass me the ball or want me on the team during whatever. But what I can like do is put in the work, show that I bust my ass, get better. That if at any point when I do get that call or that chance that I'm prepared, better be prepared than not prepared. Right. And I don't know if you remember, there's something specific where I don't know why you did it. I think you did it because it's either we got in trouble and you just hated us for something. And like, we had to do like 1,000 of everything.
Yeah. I remember. I totally remember that. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. It was in the beginning of the season. I think we did like a practice game with some other team or something. And we like sucked or like had no like, it was no like discipline or anything like that. And then you're like, this is it. Like, you guys are not ready for this season. Like, you just want to be on this team and thing. And then you ended up making us do 1,000 of burpees, squats, stairs.
Not laps. All at once. I was tracking. I want people to understand.
It was tracking. Yeah. It was tracked. But do you also remember? I remember I was on par. I did it. But then I went away for like 3 weeks. I went to Hong Kong or something.
I don't remember.
Okay. Yeah. So I went away.
You got to fill in that gap.
Okay. So I went away for a trip for the first time. I went to Hong Kong. I've never been. I've only been once. And that was only because I had to go because I was changing my age to get my like dual citizenship. So I had to go. And then I was so sad because for the last 4 years in high school, I wanted to be on Rim Rocker. But I missed it because I had to go to Hong Kong.
Rim Rocker is a huge tournament for the listeners.
Rim Rocker was like our March Madness. It was like that time. Everybody at school would come be able to watch. It was everything we wanted. I wanted it so bad and I didn't get to do it. But besides the Rim Rocker thing was we still had to do the 1,000 stuff. I remember. So I was on par with everybody, pretty close of everything. Like I was like, we were neck and neck, everybody. And then I remember I went on a trip and I was behind on all that stuff. And I came back and I was like, I knew that I didn't want no pity. I didn't want anything like that. I didn't want any of the guys to be like, yo, you still have whatever. So I remember I told you, I think I told you, I'm coming in early every day and I'm going to just, is it okay if I do? And I remember you're like, okay, sure, whatever. Cause like our practice would be at like what? 7:30, 7:00
Yeah, yeah.
I'd be there at like 6:00. I'd be at least an hour early and I would start. and I remember the first I would just catch up on stuff, and I remember the guys would be like, did you really do this or not? Like, I've been writing it down, like, you can let me know. And then I just caught up and I went right back as if nothing, like I was right back with the team in regards to the amounts and everything. Yeah.
That's then, on that's the story right there about resilience, perseverance, and the right mindset. Just that story right there speaks volumes. So yeah. I want to move on with your Top Chef Canada.
Yeah.
And so what's the process of how did you get on that to be on TV?
Yeah. So the whole reason I left restaurants was because of cancer. So because of cancer, it taught me to appreciate life. And if I have something I want to do, go for it. And like, don't regret things. Regret is the biggest word that I don't ever want to do. And so I left. At that moment, I was working at Momofuku. I opened up Momofuku. He's run by David Chang. He is, you know, GQ Man of the Year.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Very influential, very, very influential guy in the industry. And to be able to be on that team of opening the team for Momofuku was amazing. Problem was, we were at the pinnacle of cooking. You know, when I met David Chang when I was at Noma which was at that time 5-time best restaurant in the world in Denmark. Before that, I worked in Alinea in Chicago, number 7 in the world. So all these places, and I've worked for some of these, the best chefs in the world. And even the best chefs in the world, I noticed where when it was still 17, 18 hour days, you know, not getting paid much, tired, all these things. We still have jokes about like, oh, it must be nice to, you know, go out on a Friday night or be able to have sleep in on a Saturday or all these things. And it was during Thanksgiving where, because most of the team for Momofuku at that time was New York, was from the States. So they didn't know any, they were like, oh, so what are you guys doing for Thanksgiving and all this stuff? People were like, I haven't seen my family forever. I'm just going on like an all-inclusive vacation, or like, I'm just hanging out with my friend's family, or I'm just going to do catch up on laundry and stuff. I'm like, wow. It really, really hit me at that point where like, these guys are the best in the world. And all those things. I was like, I didn't want that for me. And I've worked with enough restaurants to see people that they stay in there and they can't get out. They can't get out because the restaurant industry is so hard, where on your days off, you're so tired. You really don't want to maybe say learn a new trade or whatever. And because like your income and your salary is not that great, that you can't afford to suddenly quit.
Mm-hmm.
Quit. So
I'm sure there's a lot of people in a lot of industries that feel the same way.
100%. So anyways, I decided, I was like, I can't do it. I was there physically, but mentally I wasn't there.
Right.
And I couldn't do it for people who were there every day, mentally and physically enjoying what they're doing. So I was like, hey, I'm going to leave. I didn't know what I was going to do. And I didn't give them like a 2-week.
So you knew at that point you were going to leave, yet you didn't know what your transition was.
No, I had no clue. So when I left, someone asked me to start doing some cooking classes at a local kitchen school. And I was like, oh, it's like part-time, you know, at that moment, I was like, cool. And then I was like, you know what? I really wanted to get into like food development and like create products and all that stuff. I was like, sounded really cool. So I ended up going back to school at the same time for food science,
which was online. Oh, okay.
And then, but the problem was I never took science in high school. So I had to do my prereqs first, all online by myself.
So take sciences in high school, please.
Yeah, I had to teach myself bio. I had to teach myself bio and chemistry online. Do you understand how hard that is?
But you did it. You did it.
It took me 2 years, but it took me a year and a bit, but I did it. It was the most weirdest thing because they would send me lab kits and like have all like the tinctures and like the test tubes. And anyways, so I did my prerequisites. And then after a year, I finally got the prerequisites to do my food science course. So I did my food science courses, but I didn't finish. I those 5 courses, I only did 3. The reason was because I realized that they suck. No offense to
people who run these courses.
Absolutely not. Like the university, it's Guelph University. They are great for their stuff. It was more of like, it wasn't what I was expecting.
Right.
It was not what I was expecting. It gave you the fundamentals of things, but like it didn't give you what I thought I would be getting. I thought I took this, I'd be able to create a product right away.
Right.
It was not the case. So I ended up, because it was also expensive and it was like the classing and everything was kind of hard and weird, that I just never finished. So unfortunately, out of the 5 courses, I only have done 3. And looking back at it, I think I also used it as a little like excuse. at a way of just doing something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That makes sense. That makes sense.
It was doing. It was, yeah. So, but I don't regret it. At least I can say I don't regret that. I was like, hey, I gave food science a try.
Right.
I gave food science a try. It wasn't what I wanted. Yeah. I mean, it cost me money, but you can always make money.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You can't make opportunities again or get that time again. So that's something that I've learned. If I take an L, I learn to see an L that way. And I don't let it dwindle and I just go. And then when I was doing the cooking class, Chopped happened.
Happened before Top Chef Canada?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So someone tagged me on that and I was like, oh, I don't know what to do. And then at that moment, there was this part where I was like, I needed to prove, I felt like I was missing cooking at the level that I was cooking at. I went from cooking, you know, Michelin star restaurant, you know, reservation. I only serve 12 people a day restaurants to, I'm going to teach everybody how to make, you know, pasta today or how to make chocolate brownies. So it was very different. And then a lot of them, like, and I still had a lot of chef friends that would like see me do these courses. And at the time, it was like a little like chip on my shoulder, like, I can show you that I can just cook just as well as anybody. So then I did the Chop thing. I remember I went on, I was like, if I'm going to apply to Chops, the one thing I'm going to make sure is I'm not going to cut myself. I'm not going to burn myself and I'm going to win. I had to do those things. I was like, I can't go on this and lose. See, if I had that confidence when I was on the court, it's a very different thing.
You're not the first person. My guest last week said the same thing about preparing and working and then gaining confidence. And
confidence
that's
is key.
So huge. So
confidence
huge.
Confidence is key. So I ended up going on Chopped. And I remember I went on Chopped and the whole story was, you know, I'm a cancer survivor, but also the fact that I was a culinary school teacher at that time. That would be like the title.
Right.
And I was telling people that I can cook just as good as anybody. Just because the title of that doesn't mean, and it sort of from that on, it was this became this thing of teaching and showing people that you don't have to be a restaurant chef to be a chef. Because at that time, everybody, if you ask people, even if you ask anybody, they're like, oh, you're a chef. What restaurant do you work at? That's everybody thinks a chef has to be in a restaurant. So then more and more, I was like, and I used to think that too. Because if I knew that a little more now, I would do much more of the stuff that I would have done now earlier, you know, like creating content and recipes and stuff. But anyway, so I won Chopped. And then from there, I ended up doing a bunch of like consultation stuff and stuff. And Top Chef was the show that was on. I didn't, at that time, first one or two, three seasons.
What year are we talking about? For Top Chef Canada? Because you were in season seven.
Season seven, which was 2002, last year.
Okay.
So it was like really fresh.
That's fresh.
But like, season seven. But before season seven and before season six and five and four, they had one, two, and three.
Okay.
The problem, one, two, and three, I remember where it was going. I was like, wow, these are the best chefs. Because Top Chef America was insane. It was one of my favorite shows. These are like the best chefs in the world. These are the people that you like look up to.
Right, yeah.
It's like going to like the Rocker League or like going
Okay.
And then so like year one, two, and three, I was like, wow, these guys are amazing. I never thought of competing. I was like, I'd love to do it, but I don't think I'm there. And then year four, they canceled it. And I remember the
Top Chef America, they canceled?
Top Chef Canada.
Oh, Canada.
They canceled it. And I was like, oh my God, I'm never going to have that chance again. I was like, damn it. I was like, geez. Because they canceled it because like at that time, they were trying to be more like the American version, which is like a little more drama, you live with everybody.
Yeah.
And like, I guess the Canadian audience didn't feel very, very connected to it. So they stopped it because like the funding and all that stuff. I was like, damn. And so at the time, I was still doing my consulting stuff, like trying to work with different restaurants and trying to figure out Six Pack Chef and competing. And then I remember they brought it back. And I was like, yo, this is amazing. So season four happened, season five happened, and then season six happened. Every year I was like, oh, it'd be cool. And then for some reason, I don't know why, but because then in season six, someone started tagging me into it and asked me to do it. And I was like, no. And then season seven, the application came on and there was something about me that I really wanted. And I remember, so I filled the application out multiple times and I deleted it multiple times until the day that it was due. It was 12 o'clock some day. I can't remember what it was, 12 a.m. it was due on some day. I remember I filled it up and I left it on my thing, and I didn't click submit until like 11:50 something. And then I was like, if I'm going to do this, I need to, it's serious. Meaning, because I'm somebody that did not work in a restaurant for 6 to 7 years. I am going on a show. If I make it, I'm going to be going on to this show against people who do this for a living.
Right.
For a living. And these are going to be the best of the best of all of Canada. These guys are representing the best. They're going to be working at places just like I have.
Right.
And like I've worked at great places. But I worked at those great places like 5, 6, 7 years ago. These people could be working at these places regularly on a day. Yeah. They do this for a living. And I was like, fudge, right? I was like, okay. I was like, doesn't matter. If I go on, I remember after learning from Chopped, I was like, okay, if I make it to Top Chef Canada, there's a couple things that's going to happen. A, I'm going to enjoy the process this time. It's not saying I didn't enjoy the process of Chopped, but for Chopped, I was much more cautious of like, I'm going to win.
Right.
I'm not going to screw up.
Right.
So this time, and I didn't get to like really, really enjoy the whole ambiance. Everything went so fast. And so like this time I was like, I'm going to enjoy the process. I'm going to cook my food, my way, my style, and just be me. I was like, as long as I enjoy the process, I'm just me and I'm not going to cut myself. I'm going to win. Those are the three things. It's like, if I do those three things, I'm going to have a good time.
Right.
And that was the thing. And that was a big part. And then when I remember getting onto the show was so hard because I got the first interviews. There was like 3-4 interviews and cooking and all that stuff involved. But every single interview was me having to prove myself why I was worth taking someone's spot. Specifically, it would always be like, okay, yeah, sure. So you were on Chopped, but Chopped, you know, the caliber is not what we're talking about for Top Chef Canada, right? Chopped would have been like, if you want to call it like the summer league versus the NBA.
Yeah.
Or, like, or let's call it NBA versus the playoffs.
Yeah. Okay.
That kind of, that's my comparison. It's like, you know, you can.
Different intensity.
Different intensity, everything. They're like, sure, you won Chopped, fine. You know, you worked at Noma and Alinea and all these places, but this was like years ago. And okay, sure. Like now you've taught some cooking classes. That's fine. That's okay. And you opened up a breakfast sandwich spot in Toronto, but those are breakfast sandwiches. Like, you know, why should we give you this spot? And you don't work in restaurants. So why should we give you this spot to be on this show where you're the best, you're fighting for the title of the best chef in Canada compared to people who do this on a daily basis, make these great meals and all that stuff. And I'm like, all those things are exactly the reason why you should put me on. It's because I'm not confined to a certain restaurant. Meaning I'm not confined to a certain cuisine. I'm not confined to a certain technique. I'm not coming in making dishes that you can get at my restaurant. I'm coming in with, because I don't cook with recipes. Also, if for anyone who's watching and if you didn't know, Coach, was I don't cook with recipes. So everything I do is off the cuff. It's off the fly freestyle. I tell people it's like, if a musician or a rapper or somebody would go on a beat or simply hear a lyric or something and just meld to it, yeah. I do that with food. So I'll take either a theme or ingredient or an atmosphere or something, and then I'll make something out of it based on that.
And you get into what's called flow state. You just go.
Yeah, yeah. You just drive. It's like, you know, everything's just perfect kind of vibe. And you just go with the flow. And that's what I said. I was like, that's how I do it. And especially with a competition like this, it's not Top Chef who can recreate the best recipes. It's right. Top Chef Canada at these elimination challenges and quick fires of who can adapt and make the best out of that situation. And I told them, I was like, that's why I can do this. It's because I bring something unique and different that if you give me a challenge, I'm going to make something based on the challenge. I'm not going to be like, what's in my Rolodex or recipe book of things that might fit this challenge. And then it became, I finally made it to like the cooking interview. So there's a big cooking interview where it's much more, you cook a dish that represents you. But at the same time, they've got a camera. So they're trying to see how you are with cameras and how are you talkative? Cause like, as I'm cooking, they're going to talk to you, they're ask you questions and all that kind of stuff. And that was my way of being able to like solidify it. I remember I wanted their solidify and they still asked me, you know, questions and like, things like, why should we make it? And I remember I'd make my dish and stuff. It'd be like, because you would never be able to make this dish on a restaurant. it might be too ambitious or there's too many things. But for a show like this, it's exactly what you want. It shows a story and everything.
Is the show as intense as it they make
100%.
It? 100%. Oh, okay.
So one thing I want to tell people is I don't go on shows that are not real cooking.
Okay.
I personally told myself that if I was to go on a show, I need to be able to have some control of what I will end up looking like or what I can give the production company to use. I'm a guy that I don't own a restaurant. I'm called the six-pack chef.
Right.
So then I was like, I need to be able to create something where people want to follow me for something. And that's where the social thing came about. And I created, you know, hashtag team six-pack chef or hashtag team Wallace and all these things. Yeah, it just built this thing. And it was so cool. That was it. So I created this community and that sort of got me into, kept on going with now this six-pack chef being a media creation company.
Okay, so I'm going to end off now. We're going to do a segment in Tucci Talks.
Okay.
It's called Guess What? Okay. Cool. Now, what I'm going to do is this. I'm going to give you a question.
Yeah.
If you answer it without the choices, you get 4 points. If you ask for the choices and you get it right, I'll give you 2 points. You can take one of the multiple choices out and you get 1 point, and you get -1 point if you get it wrong.
Okay.
And we're going to see what kind of chef you really are here. All right, Wallace, are you ready for the pressure? Because you love pressure.
Let's go.
All right.
I'm not the guy that was on the court anymore. Pass me the ball.
Give me the rock.
Give me the rock.
I'm giving you the rock right now. Yes.
What?
Oh, here we go. Number one.
Round one. Fight.
Coq au vin is a classic French dish with what as the main ingredient?
Wine.
Do you want me to give you the choices?
No, coq au vin is a classic French dish of braised chicken with wine and pearl onions.
Okay, you get bonus points because it says here chicken. So you know that you got it. You got the 4 points. Next question. Well, you got the 4 points. Maybe.
No, I know. I'm like, this is okay. You got me off my seat right now. Now you're my competitive side is like, okay, you're challenging me.
I love it. All right. Next question. Number two, when you coat a food in flour and breadcrumbs before frying, it is called what? Would you like breading. The choices?
No, it's breading. Breading or penne.
Well, I got to take a point off then. I got to give you the choices.
If you take chicken breast.
It says here, when you coat a food in flour and breadcrumbs before you fry it, it is called what?
Dredging.
That is correct. That is the answer.
I'm trying to figure out. Okay, I'm seeing where your answer is now. See, this is me adapting. It's like, okay, I understand what you're getting at in regards to what you're looking for. Because I'm not wrong. What I said told you was not wrong. But
well, I don't know. I'm not a chef. I just go with what's in front of me.
All I know is I'm 2 for 2 right now.
You're 8 points. You have 8 points. You got it. All right. Number three. What are sweetbreads?
Sweetbreads are actually the thymus gland of cow.
That is correct. You are at 12 points.
And they're tasty. They're so good.
All right, number four. Final question. What type of cookware is ideal for melting chocolate, making custard, and making hollandaise sauce?
Oh, it's called a double boiler. Double boiler or bain-marie.
And you are correct. So you got
4 for 4. Pass me the rack.
16 points.
Flawless victory.
What does the short-term future? What's it look like for six-pack chef?
So interesting. I actually had a talk with my girlfriend last night about this. Because I'm at this phase right now where there's a lot of things happening in my life and I'm trying to figure things out. And really, I've been testing some things, especially during COVID. And I've learned a lot of things where what I want, what I don't want, different things in regards to lifestyle. And I know for a fact, Six Pack Chef is something I still, it always will be. And the goal for Six Pack Chef is how I reach out to people. It's how I reach out to people, and it's how I get people to go through, you know, their life through touching them from food, fitness, health, lifestyle.
Amazing stuff. Thanks for sharing your insights. All right. Have fun tonight, and we'll catch up again.
Absolutely.
All right, brother. See ya.
All right, brother. Ciao.
What a resilient young man. I posted a question on the website, and I think I kind of know the answer. The question was, what quality empowers people to overcome adversity? And it's resilience. So how do we build resilience? Well, like any other skill, it's practice. And there's opportunities for practice everywhere in our lives. So the more we practice, the better we're going to become at being resilient. And speaking of resilient, next week's guest embodies resilience. She is a young woman that has walked the walk, an activist that has given a voice to the voiceless. We will go on a journey into her world and explore topics that will definitely be on the edgy side. Don't forget to subscribe, like, and share. With your help, we can definitely grow and continue to deliver the best possible content we can with the lessons that we want to learn along the way. My job this week is complete. Until next week, people, always remember to add, that's right, a little funk to your day.